Hello, I'm Victoria.
And I'm Johnny.
Welcome to Tasty Pages,
a podcast for people who love cookbooks, food, and cooking.
Each week, we'll discuss a featured cookbook from our popular Cooking the Books Instagram page.
We'll also discuss the dishes that we made and rank the book in a variety of categories,
including food photography and styling, degree of difficulty, and of course, taste.
The conversation is always unscripted, unedited, and uncensored. Spoiler alert, Victoria likes to swear.
All of this takes place in our living room in the heart of Minneapolis.
Oh yeah, we also have a featured show topic with contributions from our listeners, and we end each episode with a lame food-related joke.
Usually very lame.
Hey now.
Join us for Tasty Pages. This episode is brought to you by Marie Sharps.
If you're a regular listener to the show, you've probably heard us recommend their hot sauce.
In particular, we're quite fond of the smoked habanero pepper flavor.
We put it on everything, eggs, stir fry, even pizza.
In addition to their popular hot sauces, they also carry a wide variety of jelly, jams, gift box sets, and cool merchandise.
Marie Sharps is proudly female-owned, and their farm in Belize employs over 100 full-time staff with 85% of the workforce being female.
Our listeners can enter the discount code WeCookBooks10, that's WeCookBooks10, for 10% off their purchase when you visit MarieSharpsUSA.com. That's MarieSharpsUSA.com.
This week's featured cookbook is
Half-Baked Harvest, Super Simple by Tegan Gerard. Hey, Johnny.
Hey, Victoria.
Oh, God. Calm down.
Hey, I gotta bring the energy
okay.
to this thing. No half-stepping on this podcast.
Ain't no half-stepping.
Right? Welcome to Tasty Pages, episode 70, a podcast from Cooking the Books. Ooh, you know, when we get to 100 episodes, that's when the syndication kicks in. And that's when big money
starts rolling in.
Isn't that how it works for like television shows?
I think so.
Yeah. Episode 100. Only 30 more to go. And then have you started shopping for mansions yet?
No, not quite.
Okay. You better get on that.
I will.
It's coming.
I'm going to get myself a Lamborghini.
Yeah. How about his and hers Lamborghinis?
Yeah. Sorry, we're not assholes. But.
If you go to our website, wecookbooks.com, and click on the store tab, that will direct you to our Amazon.com affiliate page. We've got four lists there. Chosen for you, lovingly chosen for you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to show your support for the good work that we do here, all you got to do is make a purchase from any of those lists. We've got your kitchen essentials for home cooks. We've got your cookbooks. We've got your food photography and styling. And we've got your fun food finds. This is like the best original products that we love and use on a regular basis. I got some margarita pulp in my mouth. It's giving me the business. I'll take care of that. When you're talking.
Okay.
Yeah, but you make a purchase from any of those lists, we'll get a little something in return. It won't cost you anything more. It's the most immediate, effective way that you can support what we're doing here. Right?
Indeed.
All right. What are we drinking, speaking of which? I kind of let the cat out of the bag.
Seeing as we've been on a margarita kick lately, we are drinking...
Why stop?
Yep. We're drinking... Well, it's a pineapple margarita, pineapple jalapeno margarita. I did throw a few mango chunks in there, but it's really thick because we just make it with like the frozen
milkshake.
Yeah, we just make it with like the frozen fruit, but it's delicious.
Yep, you can just throw a little bit more tequila in there to water it down.
I know.
Yeah. Oh, hey, we had a fun little excursion yesterday.
Yes.
So we've been kind of lamenting and missing our kitchenware store in Chicago that we used to frequent on a regular basis.
Northwestern Cutlery.
Yep, shout out to them. And that was where we would also get our knives sharpened. And I've been kind of trying to find a new place to get knives sharpened here in Minneapolis. And
well, there was one place called Kitchen Window, but I was kind of dubious about.
Yeah.
I think they put it through like one of those like electric knife sharpener machines.
I think they just rubbed it on the sidewalk behind the store.
So I don't know. I don't think it. But anyway, the store closed.
Yeah.
So it's not.
I think
you're
probably kind of at the mercy of whatever person happened to be working there too.
And right.
Like a few of those people, like, you know, can I help you, sir? I wasn't too confident they'd treat our knives with care.
Yeah. So.
But a neighbor actually recommended this place called Eversharp Knives in Minneapolis. If you're in the area, I would definitely recommend checking them out. They mostly deal in cutlery.
Knives, have like for the most part.
Yeah, a huge selection of you know, everything from affordable to high-end.
Really?
Wasn't there like a $1,500 knife there?
Oh, it was so beautiful. Yeah. It had this flower etching on the blade.
I think that's just something you frame.
Right? I would never use that. I'd be like, no.
You don't put that through the dishwasher.
Well, you don't put any knife through the dishwasher. Especially, just so you know.
Just especially that one.
All right.
But yeah, I mean, otherwise, like, not a ton of, they don't really have, like, cookware or anything like that. But they also sharpen knives, and it was, like, very affordable. We brought a big, you know, collection of knives in, probably about a dozen or so.
Well, and they do serrated knives.
Yep.
And they do shears. Yeah. We had a pair of kitchen shears that has never been sharpened. Dull as hell.
Yes.
So this was a happy surprise.
Yeah, so great find. I'm sure we'll be going back.
Mm-hmm.
What'd we do? Oh, today we went to this place right down the street from us called Urban Forage. It's a winery and cider house. They use all locally sourced ingredients
mm-hmm.
for their different wines and ciders. And everything, including the little snacks that they have available, are 100% gluten-free.
Yes.
So we're not going to turn into one of those preachy gluten-free bloggers, but it's our reality now.
Yeah.
And this was a nice find.
Oh, also, I want to say it's family-owned. It's like a small business.
Yeah.
Okay, let me just make a blanket statement. Minnesota wines, and I know I've said this before, Minnesota wines are pure shit.
Yeah, Minnesota's not really known for its wine production.
They run... Well, here's the thing. They'll do, like... There are a lot of, like, fruit wines. Like, there was a rhubarb wine there and stuff.
There was a carrot wine.
There was a carrot wine, which I tried. I just tried a little sip. All the wines run very sweet.
Yeah.
And even the ones that they said were more on the drier side... Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Still sweet.
Yeah.
But the ciders were delicious.
Yeah, I had a pear cider.
Mm-hmm.
I had a hopped cider that had those notes in there.
I had this. Delicious. I had this. It's called a palm cider. It was like a wine cider hybrid. I enjoyed it the more that I drank it.
That kind of goes with any alcohol, really. You're not breaking any new ground there.
You make it sound like I was getting ripped to the tits, where you just get to the point like you're like, this is really good.
Yep.
No, but it kind of like grew on me because the first taste I had, I was like, but it was good.
Yeah.
So we'll definitely go back there. And they have like tons of games. They have trivia nights. So
looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Ooh, should we tell people what we've been watching? We got a new show suggestion for you.
Yes. Abbott Elementary.
We're probably late to the party on this.
Well, yeah. We
especially if someone's like an educator or teacher, they probably flock to this right away.
I have to say, I think it's the funniest show that I've seen in years. And
think of like The Office, but set in an elementary school.
Yeah, it's like
there's what I kept coming back to.
Yeah, there's like this documentary crew that is filming these teachers, and the looks that they'll give the camera, and just every single one of the characters is fantastic. And the kids are great. The kids are really great actors.
Yep. But the whole time we were watching it, I could kind of each different character in the show, you could kind of draw a direct comparison to like, oh, that's going to be the Dwight character. That's going to be the...
For some of them.
I thought for a lot of them.
No, I kind of disagree.
We'll have this discussion off air.
Because there was no Phyllis. Like,
well, no, of course not. Now you're talking about some like around the perimeter characters, but like all the major characters, the Jims and the Dwights and the Michael Scotts, like there was like a... You know, a direct link to
yeah,
to
a little
compare
bit
to.
Okay,
so,
yeah. I guess you're
anyway,
right.
Anyway, watch it. It's good.
It's great.
That's all we have to say.
A couple nights ago, we started actually on Thursday night because it just started airing on Thursday night. season 5 of The Great Pottery Throwdown.
Yeah, anyone who's a fan of like shows like The Great British Bake Off would do well to check this show out. Even if you're not a potter, which I am not, Victoria is, but
it's really funny because one of the hosts is this, he's a big bear of a guy, and he
older gentleman.
He will get super verklempt over when he's talking about a piece, and he is like on the verge of tears.
He's very emotional.
Like he'll start like blubbing like several times.
He
during
gets very worked
episode.
Up about pottery.
It's quite adorable, but it is. And it's funny because watching it is like giving me ideas of stuff to make. Oh yeah, I also started my second course of pottery.
Yep.
And it's great. Let me say I am the oldest person there by at least 15 years. So that's cool, but no, everyone is really nice. I'm super looking forward to it.
What are you going to make?
I'm going
to get some stuff sketched out.
I'm going to make some dog dishes.
Olive will love that.
Yes, I'm going to make a food dish and a water dish for Olive. I already made a plate and a somewhat big bowl. And I made a cylinder for a nice big coffee mug.
Still waiting for my bong. Haven't seen that come home yet. All right. Should we talk about what we are currently finishing up?
Yes.
This is the Red Boat Fish Sauce Cookbook that I feel like we've been working on for a while.
I know.
By, is it Gong Pham? Is that how we determined it was pronounced?
That's what it sounded like when I listened to it.
Okay.
Yes.
We've got one more dish to go, which we are finishing tonight, which leads us into what's for dinner.
Well, Johnny is having a pecan pesto. Yeah.
Don't say walnut in this house.
Pecan pesto is shrimp, and it's got like it's served over spaghetti.
Yeah.
And I'm having my turf.
Yep.
A nice big steak with some sauteed mushrooms and onions.
Oh, how cute.
Yeah.
those mushrooms are not even going to get touched.
Absolutely, they will.
Okay. Oh, we should mention what we've got coming up next because we just decided what we're going to work on next.
Yes. It's a book called Thali, and it's written by Monica Gaudron.
And it's Indian home cooking.
Monica Gaudron.
Yeah, I think that's how it's pronounced.
Yeah, I think I said M at the last one. I just kind of misspoke.
Won't be the first time we mispronounce someone's name on this show.
I know.
All right, so we talk about the show question?
Let's do it.
All right.
Not very many people answered this one.
We got a few last minute entries, so I can share those as well. But this was kind of inspired by the book Salad Freak that we just finished featuring on our feed. And the woman, the author of that book was a food stylist for Martha Stewart for quite some time. And so she developed a relationship, obviously, with Martha, but also with Snoop Dogg because of their show. And so it was kind of inspired by that. And we said, what two people would you love to see host a cooking show together? And we got some good answers.
Mm-hmm.
You want to start?
Kairos D said Christopher Walken and Lady Gaga.
I'd tune in.
Yeah.
That'd be a good one.
Absolutely.
My friend Melissa G said, aside from you and Victoria.
Oh,
how sweet. She said, I'm going to butcher this name. It's Nyanyika Mary, who is a Malawian-American chef, writer, educator.
Okay.
And this is a friend of hers, Derek Murphy Williams. I believe he's in like the beauty industry from what a quick Google search revealed.
Okay.
And my friend Melissa here is from Duluth, Minnesota. So these were both people that had some connection to Duluth. I think the chef, she had a restaurant there for a while and now resides in Massachusetts, and she's a culinary instructor, but spent some time in Duluth.
Okay.
So yeah.
All right.
Sound like it'd be a good mix of people.
Sure.
What else you got?
Maxwell Gregory 2018 said Ina and Kanye.
Hmm.
I feel like Ina would not put up with Kanye's bullshit.
I don't think Kanye puts up with Kanye's bullshit. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I'm feeling that collaboration. Brian H. said Jay-Z and Ina Garten. Another vote for Ina.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
I think that would be a good one.
That would work.
Mm-hmm.
And then Nancy M. said Gordon Ramsay and Paris Hilton. And added, do you think he could stand her? I would pose to you, do you think she could stand him?
I think he'd do the thing where he makes her hold bread on the sides of her head and says, what are you? And then she has to say, I'm an idiot sandwich.
Oh, I thought you were going to say slap witch. And then he'd like hit the loaves of bread.
Slap witch. What was that? Oh, that was from Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23.
There you go. What'd you have for your picks?
I said Elena Reagan and Lizzo.
Oh, there you go.
Right?
That'd be a good one.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't considered Lizzo, but I like that.
Yes.
All right. You got any others?
No, I only chose one.
I had one picked, and then I added a last-minute one, too. So my first choice was Michelle Obama and Questlove.
Yes! Are right? you kidding me? Yes!
I would totally tune into that, and I know they both have a connection to food. And then I started thinking Tom Waits, and I was like, who would he team up with? And I thought,
I was trying to think of someone for him,
Julia
too.
Julia Child. And if it has to be someone living, then I would say Susan Fenniger.
Okay.
Because I think they'd make a pretty fun duo.
I can see that.
Like a weird buddy cop film or something. All right. Well, should we jump into this book?
Let's
All
do
right.
it.
Half-Baked Harvest, super simple. This is the second book from Tegan Girard. A third one, Half-Baked Harvest Every Day, was released March 29th. We just finished working through that and featuring that, so that'll be in an upcoming podcast as well. This one focuses on quick, comforting meals using pantry ingredients with over 125 recipes. These are what Tegan considers like her go-to options for easy, stress-free cooking. It offers recipes for different cooking methods such as slow cooker, pressure cooker, and stovetop, making these easily adaptable and versatile. And anything else on the book?
I think you covered it.
All right.
Let's
give a little outline of what we made, and then we'll discuss them in detail.
Okay. First, there was mushroom cheesesteaks, then a slow-roasted Moroccan salmon with winter squash, sun-dried tomato and avocado salad with chicken, garden basil, pepperoni pizza, and pomegranate braised short ribs with sweet potato mash.
This margarita kind of gets in my mustache. It's a hazard of drinking these. I need a napkin over here or something. I guess my sleeve will work in a pinch. Let's talk mushroom cheesesteaks.
Okay. So
I have to say, this was probably one of my least favorite food photos that we shared on social media.
Oh, it was
media.
So ugly.
I don't know what our deal was, but we just couldn't capture this sandwich in all its beauty.
Well, it wasn't really a beautiful...
Nah.
No.
So. Oh, well.
So there was an issue with this recipe.
Yes.
To start off with.
Well, so this is kind of like a vegetarian version of the classic Philadelphia sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
So it subs mushrooms in place of the beef.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it did give you options for doing it in, you know, slow cooker or stovetop. We employed the stovetop method.
It gave you the option of pressure cooker too, which is weird. That would take like a minute and a half.
Right. Especially, using mushrooms.
It would take longer for that thing to pressurize than it would to cook.
So we had to work in batches with the onions, mushrooms, garlic, and peppers. And I believe the recipe instructed you to just like throw it all in, you know, kind of in
all in at once.
Right.
But I did them individually. And it was still very, very full. In the recipe, it's like caramelize them. There's no way that this stuff would have caramelized.
She has like a 70-inch skillet that she's using.
Oh, my God. I don't know. But like it would have all just steamed and gotten soggy and
sad. Onion, mushroom, garlic, and peppers are all vegetables that have a lot of moisture to them. So, yeah.
Yeah.
There's not going to be any caramelizing going on when you're tossing them all in like that.
And then it was served with a yum-yum sauce, which was... tahini, a little bit of honey, some smoked paprika, garlic, and chili powder. The sauce really needed some acid and some more heat. Since it had tahini in it, it leaned more peanut buttery.
Yeah, is that where your mind goes when you have something with tahini in it?
Sometimes. Because
mine generally does. Like, it's to me, in my to my palate, it's a very similar flavor profile. And I know they're not, you know, coming from exactly the same, you know, one's sesame based and one's like peanut based, but I don't know, for whatever
like,
reason.
I feel like it depends on what you're using it for.
Okay. Like, I was just curious. Yeah. Yeah, like that's where my mind went with this sauce when we made it and then we're testing it, you know, tasting it. It little too in the peanut butter territory for my liking.
So we ended up adding some lemon juice and harissa to punch up the acid and the heat. We skipped the step because it's and I feel like it would get like really messy or whatever. And I feel like the way we did this made more sense because it said to fold it in half and wrap it up in tin foil.
Right.
But we just kept ours open face and stuck it under the broiler.
Or for our British fans, aluminium.
Aluminium foil.
Yes.
Aluminium wrap. Yeah, we just kept ours open face and stuck it under the broiler to melt the cheese.
And it gets the bread a little crispy too.
Mm-hmm. The edges get nice and crispy.
Yeah. So, I mean, this in the end was like a really tasty sandwich, but we definitely had to make some adjustments with both the method and the ingredients.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anything else to say on this?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Next up, we got slow roasted Moroccan salmon with winter squash.
Let's see. What can I say about this?
Another victory for salmon.
Yeah. This used acorn squash, and it got tossed in sambal oleic, olive oil, honey, gets roasted in the oven. And then once that gets soft, the salmon gets rubbed down with a little bit of harissa seasoning and some lemon. And then it gets finished with and then it roasts in the oven for like 20 to 30 minutes. It is a slow roasted salmon.
Yeah.
And then it gets brushed with some pomegranate molasses.
Right. Now, no fault of the recipe, but I found our acorn squash to have a thicker skin than I would have preferred.
Yes, it was a little bit toothsome. The yeah. squash was like very nicely cooked, but the skin was a little bit problematic for
me. So we probably should have used something different than an acorn squash.
I feel like a kombucha would have been good.
Or a butternut or something.
Yeah.
Something with a thinner skin. But that's, you know, that's no fault of the recipe. I actually really enjoyed this dish.
I did too.
I thought the flavors on this were good and needed less adjustment to make taste good. I don't even know if we really made any adjustments.
No, I don't think we did.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so that one was a winner.
Sun-dried tomato and avocado salad with chicken.
This one was super duper easy. I think it's so funny. I feel like sun-dried tomatoes are kind of making a comeback.
You think they're going to be the dish, the ingredient of the summer, maybe?
I don't know. I just feel like I've been seeing them a lot. And
when do radishes get their chance?
You don't like radishes, so why do you care?
I'm still going to be firmly anti-radish.
I know. But anyway, it gets like sun-dried tomatoes that are packed in olive oil. And the oil gives it a nice concentrated flavor, and it also serves as a base for the dressing. Mm-hmm. The dressing was some bacon fat, lemon juice, vinegar, and honey mustard with a little bit of red pepper flake. And the salad itself was spinach, bacon, avocados. We used a rotisserie chicken.
And I believe it does mention in the recipe that you can use that. And then there was some feta cheese
and toasted pine nuts. Mm-hmm. And then a little bit of dill.
Yep. Dill is kind of like the hot cousin that's visiting from out of town that you bring to a party. And everyone's hitting on them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Unexpected, but they just instantly fit right in.
Sure.
Everyone loves them. That's my hot take.
That's a great take. This one was okay. I mean, it wasn't great. It wasn't...
It's not setting the world on fire.
No.
It's a salad.
It's a, yeah, it was like a nice salad.
It's a salad with common ingredients.
It feels like something that you would order in a diner, kind of.
Or like a
Chili's.
A Cracker Barrel.
Yes.
Or a...
Chili's or Applebee's or something.
Lots of flair.
Yeah.
All right. Maybe some wagon wheels on the wall.
various pieces of crazy crap on the wall.
Yep. some cross-country skis.
Mm-hmm.
How about this garden basil pepperoni pizza? This needed a little work.
It did. Because it, the way the recipe goes, it says to toss the cherry tomatoes in garlic and olive oil, and then you put them on the pizza.
Right. Along with a can of crushed tomatoes that you kind of like spread over it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a mixture. We omitted the can of crushed tomatoes mm-hmm. entirely, and then this is a method that we've been doing for a while.
Mm-hmm.
By we, I mean you. Where you throw some cherry tomatoes and garlic on a sheet tray and just let them kind of roast in the oven and melt, and the tomatoes collapse, and it just has this nice jammy,
mm-hmm.
Rich.
It's like a tomato confit, and yeah. like the juices from the tomato like kind of thicken up and everything. It gets yeah. nice and sweet and rich.
And it makes a great, you can put it in pasta, you can put it on a flatbread, you
yep.
can put it on a toast. So anytime we make this, I'm always happy when we have leftovers, because then we can like do some lunches the next day or something with it. So that was our method that we used for this. And then this had to have been like one of the last gluten meals that you had.
Mm-hmm.
I was just thinking about that mm-hmm. when I was looking at this, because we used our Paul Kahan pizza dough recipe.
We still have another ball of that pizza dough in the freezer.
I'm on it.
You need to get on it, because yep. I can't.
So yeah, this needed some adjustments.
And it had some pepperoni and basil.
Yes. But now the recipe instructs you to like stretch your dough out, shape your dough, put all these ingredients except for the basil on there, and then just chuck it in the oven after you grease a sheet tray. Put this all on there and throw it in the oven. Generally, we find that when you do a method like that, the crust never gets done before all the ingredients. Like if you want a nice brown, crisp crust, it's never going to get to that stage before everything else is like completely done. And, you know, then it's just going to be, stuff's going to start getting charred and burned.
Yeah. So we always like par bake our crust on mm-hmm. on a pizza stone.
And I don't really see the point in greasing the sheet tray. I mean, obviously, you don't want it to stick. But, like, I would much rather, like, usually the method we do is, like, put it on a pizza stone and we just, like, use a peel with a bunch of...
But here's the thing. Not everyone has a pizza stone.
Yeah, I know.
And the greasing the sheet tray will, like, give the bottom of the... Like, I mean, if you've ever seen, like, a Pizza Hut... pizza, there is so much grease in the bottom of the pan, and that's why their crust is fucking delicious.
It's been so long since I've had a pizza.
And like Detroit pizza, there's so much grease in the bottom of the pan so that like the crust gets like nice and crispy.
Okay.
So I totally understand that.
Noted.
Yeah.
So yeah, we did make a few adjustments to this. We, you know, par baked the crust mm-hmm. before applying the ingredients. You know, we cut out that can of crushed tomatoes.
But I feel like if we would have done it the way that the recipe called for, it would have been kind of blah. I feel like those tomatoes were like the star, and it was like really rich and delicious. Mm-hmm. So I
Agreed.
Don't know. Yeah.
And really, I didn't feel like it was, as far as hands-on time, there it wasn't really that much
Mm-mm.
additional work. I mean, yes, it probably added time to the recipe because you had to make that first, but you can do that while you're doing other stuff. So
yeah.
Anything else on this?
I don't think so.
Lastly, we had a pomegranate braised short rib with sweet potato mash.
Just one rib?
Yep.
How much for one rib?
Yeah, didn't you say you saw a place that actually they called it the Chris Rock?
Yeah. As I said, because if you guys have never seen the movie, I'm going to get you sucker. Sucker.
Like a true white person.
I'm going to get you, sucker.
Yep.
Chris Rock walks into his character, walks in.
A very young Chris Rock.
Oh,
man,
I think
he was like a baby.
Yeah. He walks into a rib joint and he's like, how much for one rib? And then he holds out his hands and he's like, can you just put some soda in here?
Yep. So then you said that you saw the menu at a barbecue place and they had something called the Chris Rock and it was like, just one rib.
Yep. It was expensive though. It was like $5 for one rib.
Wow. So what I guess that's how much for one rib.
That better
$5.
That better be a meaty freaking rib.
Question answered. All right. So back to this dish. This was kind of a slow cooker situation.
Yes, it was.
Low and slow. Mm-hmm. So
this was another thing that we had to adjust the recipe on too.
Yeah, do tell.
Well, they get braised in pomegranate juice, but there was not nearly enough pomegranate juice. So we ended up adding some beef broth in there too for the braising liquid.
And then some onion, shallot, honey, ginger, and thyme go in there.
And then the surprise, I was like totally shocked by this. Like, you put the sweet potatoes on top of everything.
Just rest them on top.
And it cooks that way.
Yeah.
That, you know, like, that kind of blew my mind a little bit. I was like, what?
We were a little skeptical.
I know.
And it worked.
Yeah.
Everything came out properly cooked. And this was a good dish. There was some, wasn't there pomegranate seeds that went on top too?
Yes.
So it made for a beautiful presentation as well.
Yeah. And the sweet potato gets mashed up at the end. But here's the thing though. I have to say, we've made numerous short rib recipes. Mm-hmm. Some have been, I feel like a lot of them have been absolutely stellar. Like, blow your mind, like, where you think about them for the next couple days.
Yeah.
This was not that for me.
Yeah.
So.
I get it.
You know.
I kind of felt that way about all this stuff. And that's a perfect segue into our rankings for this book. But before we do that, per usual, we'll go to the most critical Amazon reviews. It should be noted that this book has over 10,000 ratings at the time of this recording on Amazon. So that
how long has this book been out?
A few years. You have the book in front of you. A few years. I mean, the third one just came out, but I mean, that gives you an idea into the popularity of Half-Baked Harvest brand, because I don't run across very many cookbooks that have that many rankings. And so 10,000 is pretty impressive.
Yeah, it is.
So let's see. I'll start with the first one. This one comes from Mrs. HB, and she gives it 1 out of 5 stars. Pretty pictures, terrible recipes. Ooh. The gauntlet is thrown. I own tons of cookbooks and collect them as a hobby. After trying a few recipes, I wonder if people giving high ratings to this book are actually cooking from it. My family almost choked on the Cuban sheet pan steak. Swirled banana bundt cake was dry, and the cod with pan sauce was nothing great. This book is beautiful, but what the heck is with the recipes? Stick to Ina. She knows what she's doing.
Another shout out for Ina.
She's getting lots of love on this episode.
This is a long one. So this is from Polina. 1 out of 5 stars. Waste of money. I purchased this book because of the beautiful pictures about a year ago. And I have to say, the author is a talented food photographer. However, after trying multiple recipes, me and my husband are pretty disappointed with the actual content. After spending hours in the kitchen, because it's not actually super simple at all, and spending money on expensive ingredients, we sometimes couldn't even finish the meal. Sun-dried tomato and avocado salad was too heavy on the fat and tasted bizarre. Heavy buttered mushroom and wild rice was pretty disgusting. We threw it out. Rosemary peach bruschetta was inedible. Also wasted money. Ended up ordering pizza. See, you just got to keep an emergency pizza in your freezer.
Oh, sorry.
I know.
Are you done
yet? Okay. Here, let's see. I'm going to cut a little bit.
I'm just funning you. I just thought it was funny that, you know, in the process of critiquing this cookbook, this person wrote a novel.
I know, right?
Wrote a dissertation.
So basically, they liked about 3 of the recipes out of this book. They felt that they were overly complicated for how they actually tasted.
And they questioned where you get fresh sage at. They said, also, where do you get fresh sage at a regular store?
So, right? Try the herb section.
Yep.
Anyway, I'm scared of trying any other recipes at this point because it just might turn out to be a waste of money. I feel like this book is just a giant photo op and I can't return it anymore. Hopefully someone will read this and won't buy this book because of all the great reviews.
All right. She's trying to warn people.
Uh-huh.
Trying to sound the alarm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's move on to our rankings, beginning with food photography and styling. What'd you have?
I gave it a 5. It was really beautifully styled. And to me, it had this like very, like when I think of shabby chic, like I think of light, white, airy. But this like had a little bit of a darker shabby chic aesthetic to me. A lot of the stuff, a lot of the food was photographed on like a darker wood or like a linen. Lots of really intricacies.
I gotcha.
Intricate. Yes.
Okay. I'm here for you.
I could not say that freaking word ever.
We'll record you saying that.
And we can just and loop
just,
it
yeah,
in.
Yeah, we'll it'll be like this great edit because it'll just be like intricacies. Intricate. All right.
Styling. Like there's flakes of salt and carefully placed flowers and basil and herbs and tons of fresh flowers. Mm-hmm. The food is, it looks beautiful. It's beautifully styled. There's really gorgeous landscape photos. There's a few photos of Tegan.
And she resides in Colorado. So yeah. You know, if you are familiar with that area, that's her home, and all the landscape photos are from there and reflect that.
And they were all taken like mostly during the fall, and then I think there was like one winter photo. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Yeah, the photos were gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
No.
I gave it a 5 as well.
Okay.
I mean, I think this is really the strong point of the book, her brand. She definitely has a knack for food photography and styling. These photos are all gorgeous and inviting. All of the recipes feature a companion photo, usually shot overhead of the completed dish. There's a real attention to detail. So there's always like a finishing sprinkle of some fresh cracked pepper, some minced herbs, a little drizzle of olive oil or sauce on the dish. There's a, like you said, a very rustic aesthetic. Mm-hmm. They'll be filmed on a surface that's got like some, you know, chipped or peeling paint or something like that. Like, rustic. The chapter pages feature a variety of photographs. So they'll be like either raw ingredients, landscapes, like you mentioned, a few photos of the author without being too over the top. But yeah, this is definitely the highlight of the book for me. Design and layout.
What'd you give it?
I gave it a 4.
Okay.
You're either going to love or hate the recipe head notes for this book. They're a bit lengthy. They're definitely written in kind of a conversational style that mirrors the author's personality. Much of the language really hypes up how awesome she thinks the recipes are.
Oh, that's right. You were talking. You mentioned that to me.
Yes. Almost begging you to make them. Like, you guys, this is going to be a game changer, this salad. If only the recipes lived up to the hype. I think oftentimes they kind of fall short of that. But she's definitely possesses that kind of showmanship and the hype. The serving sizes and times in each recipe use a font that's this kind of light gray color. Sound familiar? We talked about this last episode for the Love and Lemons book. And there's a lot of similarities between these two. The index in front offers guidance for recipes that can be made using an Instant Pot or a slow cooker, or 10 ingredients or less, 30 minutes or less, one pan. They've got these little symbols for the recipes if they fall into those categories. So if you're looking for quick, easy, whatever, you know, you can generally find those recipes pretty easily within the book. There's a throwaway pantry ingredients section. Can this die already? It's in every cookbook that we review. And I feel like at this point, it's not really necessary. It's kind of antiquated.
Okay, American cookbooks do not need it. That's all I'm going to say.
Well,
if it's another cuisine, I think,
unless it is specifically targeted to absolute beginner cooks, you know, this is going to be your first cookbook. Like, I could see some cookbook like The Joy of Cooking or something having a section in there. But let's just assume, just by virtue that this is a cookbook, someone who buys it probably enjoys cooking.
And they're going to have more than like three spices.
They're going to have a pantry set up.
And
you don't have to like explain in agonizing detail.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. The chapters are divided into the usual suspects, such as breakfast, appetizers, salads, poultry, seafood, dessert, that kind of thing. Like I said earlier, the book shares many similarities with the one that we just previously discussed on our last episode, Love and Lemons Every Day.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of similarities.
Yep.
So what'd you have?
Okay, I gave it a 4 as well. It was, yeah, like you said, it was organized by like meal / popular main ingredient.
Mm-hmm.
What I liked on the top of the page is that there is a key that indicates if it's an Instapot or slow cooker, if it's like pantry staples, if it's 30 minutes or less, if it's 10 ingredients or less, or if it's one pan. Did you catch that?
I did. I mentioned that already.
Okay. See, I thought you said...
You never listened to me.
No, you said it was like in the index. But,
yeah.
But like, that key was like up at the top of the page.
Right, right. Yeah. At the very beginning of the book, it kind of explains that whole code.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But that was at the top of the page. What I liked is that the recipes have serving size. There is a prep time, a cook time, and a total time. I absolutely do. And also for different cooking methods, they were separated into different sections, like a slow cooker, pressure cooker.
And that was one of the critiques that we had of that recent book that we featured, The One Pot Pan Planet, because it kind of jumped around within the recipe when it offered you
vegan
alternatives. Yeah. And it got really confusing. So this was a little bit more clearly defined.
Yep. I also said that the font was very small, but I felt like within the recipe, it was dark enough to be able to see.
Yeah. I didn't have any issues with the font type or size, except for within the recipe, the serving sizes and the times for each recipe.
They were light. I agree with you.
This very light gray font that made them a little bit of a challenge to read.
Yes. Degree of difficulty. I gave it a 2.5.
Okay.
Inherently, I feel like these recipes were not difficult. Maybe I should give it a 3. Because the way that some of them are written, they wouldn't...
Made it difficult.
Yes.
Or maybe confusing.
Yes. Or they wouldn't turn out if you did it that way. Like the recipe for the cheesesteak was kind of bunk.
Yeah.
And there wasn't enough liquid in the short ribs.
I mean, of the critical Amazon reviews, that was the one thing that seemed to be a common critique.
Okay.
Take that for what it is.
What'd you give it?
I gave it a 2.
Okay.
This is a book that's clearly written by and for the home cook.
Yes.
Even the dessert chapter mostly features things like cakes and bars. Some reviews complained about recipe errors, but I don't think we encountered too much of that personally. There just might have been like issues with the methods. I know someone had mentioned that there was like a brownie recipe that omitted like baking soda or baking powder.
Oh,
but
okay.
We can't speak from experience with that. So
yeah, we didn't make any of the desserts.
Be forewarned that there may be some errors or omissions in here. There was a recipe tester that was thanked in the acknowledgments, so they did spend some time having someone test the recipes. And then, of course, Tegan comes from a large family who she mentioned, you know, within the recipe, like, oh, they taste everything and offer feedback and stuff. So she's got kind of a built-in team of recipe testers within her family.
Who knows? Maybe, like, with that recipe, like, it was just something that, like... Her recipe had that, but it was like omitted in
the
book.
Right.
Like, who knows what happens? But I mean, it shouldn't happen.
Yeah. But I mean, that said, most of the recipes are under 10 ingredients and require 30 minutes total time to complete. We may have changed a few methods and ingredients, like we mentioned with the pizza. But you know, I guess you know, I know who this book is written for, and I give it a 2 for difficulty because I don't think overall that anyone's going to really struggle or be challenged by these dishes.
Right.
So.
Okay. Taste. What did you give it?
I gave it a 3.
Okay.
I think this book suffers from a similar fate as Love and Lemons in that all the recipes were just okay and required adjustments to the methods or seasonings to improve upon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just going to come down to your own personal tastes and experience to know when that might be necessary. What'd you have?
I gave it a 3.5. I was a little bit more generous. Everything was tasty, but it was unremarkable.
Yeah.
I feel, you know, maybe it's just like something that I need to use as a marker, like a short rib recipe. If it's like I was saying before, we've made other short ribs from books
countless
where,
times, sure.
where like, I'm just like, poof, yeah. like my mind is blown. And this one, I was like, eh, well, they were good.
I feel like with both of these books, and I'm not trying to lump them into the same category, but I do feel like they are kind of,
I feel like they are kind of the
a similar demographic. Mm-hmm. I just feel like they're not lacking in flavor, but there's not like a depth of flavor that takes them to the next level. And I
agree.
Think that is often the challenge when you're doing a book where you're trying to make them like quote unquote quick and easy.
Absolutely.
You just don't have time to like develop flavor in these dishes that would kind of elevate them to the next level.
That's absolutely the crux of it too. Yeah. Like developing flavor takes time. And when you're making like 30-minute meals.
Right.
You don't get that.
It's tough. And I mean, this is still home cooking, so mm-hmm. it's going to be better than eating takeout mm-hmm. or eating canned and processed stuff, but it's not going to rise beyond that. So, all right.
All right.
Anything else?
I don't think so.
All right. Let's move on to our segment, Gastro Obscura. Exploring the weird and wonderful culinary traditions, experiences, and ingredients. This is from the book of the same name. What do you got for us this week?
Okay, so this week, this is really interesting because this is something that you were telling me about.
Yeah.
I'm
a fountain of useless knowledge, culinary knowledge.
This is called A Holy Kitchen Feeding Thousands for Free. And it's Langar at the Golden Temple. It's in a place called the Shri Hamadir Sahib, and it's known as the Golden Temple. It's in the city of Amritsar in Punjab. And this place serves between, it usually serves about 75,000 free meals a day.
Per day?
Per day.
Wow.
And on special occasions, it can go up to 100,000. This place is run solely by volunteers, and it's part of a practice called Langar, which translates to display of humanity and equality. So regardless of class, caste, and gender, everyone sits on the floor to eat. The kitchen is made up of different buildings. Some of the kitchens have dedicated tasks, such as a doll room or like a doll building or a stew building.
So this almost sounds like a small village devoted
yes.
to this whole event.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And in recent years, they've started using machinery. They have one that makes rotis, and it can make up to 25,000 rotis in an hour.
Wow.
But the thing is, each one of those rotis gets hand brushed with ghee, which is clarified butter, for those of you who don't know, before it gets served.
So someone's got to be on ghee duty.
There is still like a human element to that.
So if my high school math is correct, they're serving like millions of meals per month.
Yes.
That is remarkable.
Yeah. At mealtime, the diners will file in. They grab a metal tray, a water cup, and cutlery, and then they sit on the floor in rows. Volunteers walk down the rows, and they fill the different compartments of the metal trays with dal or stew or what have you. And then the diners hold out their hands for the rotis as a sign of respect. The meals are really nutritious and they're simple.
And vegetarian, you said, right?
Vegetarian.
Yeah.
And the food is tasty. But a lot of people just go there like for the ritual and just for the exercise of eating together and like having equality and harmony. Harmony. I'm like, Harmony.
You want me to pronounce that for you too? and this concept of Langar, mm-hmm. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, but I don't know if you mentioned like this, it's kind of like the practice of like humility and mm-hmm. generosity. And so, you know, people will make a pilgrimage to this
yes.
place to, you know, volunteer to eat a meal, mm-hmm. the sense of community. So, I mean, it's a really crazy phenomenon. It's like something I knew nothing about.
I feel like the concept could never happen here.
No, probably not.
Ever. Not ever.
Nope. But
which is sad.
Yeah. Kudos to them.
What a lovely thing.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. So if you enjoyed the show, please rank and review us. You can follow us on our socials. Our Instagram is at @we_cook_books. And our Facebook is at We Cook Books.
All right. You know what time it is?
Make me laugh.
It's time for a lame food joke. I've got not one, but two of them. I'm going to give you the choice. I'm going to do something a little different here.
Oh.
You can choose what's behind door number one or door number two.
Let's go for door number
Spoiler
two.
Alert, they're both pretty lame.
I'm sure they are.
You want to go to door number two?
Yeah.
All right. So I went to the grocery store in our neighborhood the other day, and I saw the sign on the door, and it said, no food or drinks inside. So I turned around and went home.
That is so dumb. Okay, go ahead and give me number one anyway.
Oh, no, you don't get a
chance. No, come on.
Really?
Don't be a dick.
That's not how this works. You're doing it wrong. Okay, why do beginner chefs only cook Asian food? Because they need to walk before they can run.
So stupid.
I told you. I did warn you.
That's like a dad joke.
Yep, to be fair, I did warn you. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Stay safe.
Have a fantastic week. Stay hungry.